What's up, Beardos? I'm Linda.
I'm Ken.
We are Paul's parents.
And you're listening to episode 209 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't really answer the question first by not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini episode, I'll be asking the question, Andy, what should I do with my life?
Paul, I'm sorry to spoil it now. I really have no idea what you should do with your life. I'm here to talk through it with you. I think the only thing that I'm pretty sure of, is I'm going to do my damnedest to convince you not to work for a vegan nonprofit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But that's how it's going to tie all together to the themes of this show.
Well, you've kind of spoiled part of the... what I did not know that that was your opinion, and now I do. Interesting. Well, I look forward to you telling me why.
And maybe you can turn me around on that.
But probably not.
But yeah, Paul's at a crossroads in your life.
I am quarter life crisis.
And we're going to try to talk through it today. Before we do that, though, just a very quick announcement that next episode's the mailbag, and that means we want your listener question, comments, concerns. No question too big, too small, or too medium. And yeah, hey, besmirch the name of medium. If you have a question, something you would like for us to respond to on the air, we always love to hear from you, no matter what it's about. You can send that to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And of course, don't forget, anyone that has left us a review on iTunes or Stitcher is in the running to be chosen randomly to be a winner to get some Bearded Vegan swag. So get those reviews in as well.
I will say, get those questions in quickly, though, because when you are listening to this, if you are listening to this the day that this episode comes out, we may have already recorded the mailbag, but probably not. We'll probably record it like tomorrow or something.
We're just spoiling all sorts of things in our introduction today. And then two more announcements. First off, this is the weekend I'll be speaking at the Desert Veg Fest with Chelsea Lincoln and Callie Coker. And we're doing our Fat Liberation and Body Neutrality in the Vegan Movement panel, so should be a fun time. We'll be speaking at 1 p.m. And then Paul, It's been a minute, but we have put another bonus episode up in the Patreon.
That's right. And guess what we're talking about, Andy?
Is it the thing we swore we would never talk about ever again?
Multiple times? Yes, it is. Talking about the Impossible Whopper and the recent lawsuit that someone is filing. Philip Williams?
Philwell. Yeah.
Affectionately known as, who is suing Burger King over the cross-contamination, claiming that is false advertisement, that it is not in fact a vegan product. We also talk about Herbivorous Butcher and their current legal issues with Nestle.
Legal issues? They are suing Nestle.
Suing the pants off them.
Yeah, there's a dispute over who can use the term the vegan butcher. So it's a tale of two lawsuits. Mm-hmm. I feel very proud about that name.
You do. So check out so if you are a Patreon subscriber, even at just the $1 level, you have access to all of our bonus episodes. And yeah, you can check that out. You can find the Patreon link at thebeardedvegans.com/beardo. It's a b-e-a-r-d-o beardo.
It's a nice rhythm.
It is.
You had to that right there.
Thank you.
So yeah. And of course, we always appreciate anyone that does help us out. So it's our way of saying thank you. If you throw a couple bucks our way. You can also get early access and merch and all that good stuff at that link. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. Paul.
Yeah.
This is like going to be a very different type of episode for us today.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it very much relates to the struggles of like being a vegan activist and like wondering like, what should we do with our life? How can we most effectively like navigate this world? We get questions all the time from people saying I'm vegan, but I work at a job that's like, quote unquote, not vegan. And that can mean a variety of things, but I know this is something that you're struggling with. So like lay it down. Maybe old Andy can help talk you through what's up. Where are you at in your life right now? And what is the void that you're about to step out into?
Yeah. So this is certainly going to be a slightly more personal episode than normal, which I guess we should acknowledge, which is why my parents were the ones who did the intro.
Oh, is that who they were?
So I'm on the precipice of graduating with a master's degree in mathematics, and I am at the stage, I still have one more semester at the time of this recording, but I'm at the stage where I need to start thinking about jobs and applying for jobs. And so it's kind of basically in the math community, everyone either continues on in academia, which is not what I'm going to be doing, or works in industry is what they usually say, which usually means some sort of working for like the government or some bank or some financial institution or like NASA or something like that. And most of these options that are like the typical options that people do are really things that just don't appeal to me. Like I'm not really attracted to working for like a large corporation or a bank or doing something like becoming an actuary, which is basically just yes,
what
Andy?
Is that?
So it's basically working for like an insurance company or some other financial institution, but especially insurance companies where they basically use statistics and probability to measure the risk of different insurance practices, like should we cover this person or should we cover this pre-existing condition? What will it mean for like how many people have this? What will it mean for how much we're going to have to pay people as the insurance company? And yes, Andy?
Sounds evil.
That's what, and I was doing like a little reading online and I literally just Googled, I think you may have too, like, is being an actuary unethical? Like I Googled that and there's a few like Reddit discussions and other discussions on actuary forums, which I feel like, of course, people are like, no, we're fine. But most of the people on, like to their credit, most of the people in like the Reddit posts and stuff, they were kind of saying things like, well, you know, it's like, you're not the person that is making the decision, like, should we cover this pre-existing condition or not? You're kind of just the person that's crunching the numbers and figuring out all the data. But then you're giving that data to someone else who is then going to have to decide, you know, whether or not we should cover someone or not. And obviously it's like in our current, I wish that our current healthcare and insurance systems were different, but in the way that they are now, obviously people are going to be doing these things. It's like someone somewhere needs to decide. It's not as though insurance companies, they don't just have an unlimited amount of money. So they have to like draw some cutoff line somewhere. So even if I acknowledge, but you have to agree, like obviously an insurance company can't just say, we're always going to cover everything 100% of the time.
Yeah, I guess.
If it's like a private insurance company, they just don't have an infinite amount of money. And so what I'm saying, Andy, is, okay, I wish that the system was different, but the system is not different. So I need insurance. So I'm going to go to one of these insurance companies to get insurance. And because these insurance companies can't just give out money, 100% of the money, 100% of the time, obviously like it's someone's job to decide like, okay, we need to cut this off somewhere. And is that like, is having that job inherently an unethical job? And I'm not even saying that I wouldn't be the person that does that. I would just be the person that I could be the person that gives this the data for that person to decide what to do with it. And is that like an inherently unethical job?
I have so many questions, Paul.
I'm probably not going to be able to answer them.
Well, I guess, one, that reasoning sounds an awful lot like someone that says, I'm not the one that's killing the animal. And like this other person's doing it, even though I'm the one that's going to like eat the animal and I'm ultimately like funding it for it to happen. And you, in your life circumstance, you're not like the exploited migrant farm worker that has like no other options. And that's like what we're here to do, is to talk about your options. My other question is, what else could an actuary do? Like if Medicare for All happens, does that mean that actuaries go away?
I don't think so, because even Medicare for All, it's not like that saying we're giving all of the money to everyone all of the time. Like there still needs to be people who determine how much money to give, or like what, you know, like the probability that these sorts of things are going to happen. You know, like what's the probability that someone's going to die at this, at what age is someone like likely to die, and how much should we charge because of like based on these things?
Are there non-healthcare related applications for actuaries?
Andy, I think not being an expert about this. Also, I will also say being an actuary is just like one possible path. But for me, I do think it kind of encompasses my discomfort with these things, in that it's similar to some of these other paths, in that it's like, am I just like, if I was working for a bank or if I was working for certain branches of the government and stuff, am I just like making something better that I don't necessarily want to make better? Like, I don't need like, oh, I'm helping these insurance companies to make like, to be the most profitable that they can be, or these banks to be the most profitable that they can be. It's like, I don't really want to do that. But to answer your question, I do think that actuaries can work in other sort of like finance, because they can measure like financial risks and stuff like that too. So other sort of financial endeavors.
It seems like they're kind of like generally involved in institutions that the average authority hating punk would not feel is in full like alignment with their values.
That's
like a pretty safe thing to say.
I believe so.
So I think if I had to guess, like the biggest struggle you're having is those types of jobs, mm-hmm. working for things that we feel less comfortable with, if not entirely uncomfortable with, pay a lot more than ones that maybe feel a little bit more in line with your ethics. I did just quickly look up average income for an actuary, and it's $102,000.
It's a lot of money.
Almost 103. And
so close.
That extra thousand really makes it. I mean, it's $102,880 is the average. So, which is $49.46 per hour, roughly. Hmm. And if I had to guess, the average nonprofit worker in the animal rights sector is probably not making more than half of that, if not significantly less.
Like I would say that's
like 30,000 or less.
Yeah. So basically it's like my struggle is, do I go with one of these jobs that's kind of the, and you know, it's like, I'm not saying that there isn't some position that I could probably find that's like where I wouldn't feel like I was doing something bad, like where I wouldn't feel like I was making an institution that I don't want to support better. I could probably find, I could find something where it's like neutral, you know, it's like, oh, I'm working for this, I'm just going to throw this out there, toothpaste company or something like that, and managing their...
That tests on animals, Paul.
And, you know, like managing their risk and stuff like that. I don't know. Where it's like, okay, it's like, I don't feel like I'm not making the world a worse place, but I'm also not making the world a better place by making sure that this toothpaste company makes the most money that they can possibly make. But it's kind of like that versus using these skills that I have that are some things where it's like fewer people maybe have some of these skills in general to like make the things that I want to make better in the world better. So the obvious one would be like vegan organizations, but even more broadly working for other like human nonprofit organizations as well. It's like, I that seems the more likely one that I would be able to get, just because it seems like there are so few vegan organizations that would even be big enough to like have these sorts of positions. Mm-hmm. But something like, you know, like the Red Cross or something like that, these huge, and I'm assuming Red Cross is a nonprofit organization. Also, a lot of these huge nonprofits often come with some baggage as well, and they're not perfect, and they are also involved in controversies. Not all of them, clearly.
I would also argue that a lot of the smaller ones as well.
Yeah. So I guess I should say, it's not even like saying, oh, I just want to work for a nonprofit and I'm just going to work for any nonprofit that I can. It's more so just like, I want to work for somewhere where I feel like I'm using my skills the unique skills that I can give to do something that I feel like is going to be meaningful and beneficial.
You're saying you have a certain set of skills.
I was trying to avoid saying that, Andy. So it's either that or work for one of these companies that I maybe disagree with, make a whole butt ton of money, and then, you know, donate my time and some of my money to these other organizations. Like, would that be better? Would that be more meaningful to some of these organizations than me working for them, you know?
So that is sort of the utilitarian school of thought these days, which is that it's often better to go make a lot of money and then donate to other people, because so Paul, I think even though you've already opened up the conversation to say you're not just purely trying to work for a vegan nonprofit, that is where my opinions lie. That's yeah. where my experience lies. So I'll be speaking mostly to that, and these opinions may or may not. I'd guess there's a lot of crossover, Venn diagram, if you will. But like in the vegan nonprofit world, there is very little money to go around. And a lot of the organizations that everyone knows and loves get a lot of their funding from a handful of people. There's like a handful of people that if they were to just disappear, there's probably a lot of organizations that would disappear as well, or be greatly compromised, or have to lose a lot of people. And that's not a good position to be in for a number of reasons. Obviously, you don't want to be dependent on like one or two individuals purely because if they disappear, that's not going to be good for you. But also because it means you're like beholden to them to fund projects that they think are the most effective. And maybe they don't have the actuarial background to really actually like mathematically determine what the risk of success of various interventions in the animal rights world or whatever it might be. But I've seen this play out for like organizations that, you know, I've been a part of or friends have been a part of, where like things happen only because some of these donors want them to happen. And that seems like that's a horrible thing. So you could alleviate that. You could like widen the pool of wealthy benefactors. Now, granted,
Paul, the wealthy benefactor. So I twirl my mustache.
Well, not an evil wealthy benefactor. But again, I mean, you're not getting to the point where you can keep multiple nonprofits afloat just making 100 or 200,000 a year. That's like, you live a pretty comfortable life and you're able to probably donate to every single Facebook charity that ever pops up for people's birthdays, you know? So it's like, so there's that benefit of that. And a lot of the utilitarian folks that are now in the vegan camp, their school of thought is you can do so much good. You can save so many animals with so little. I say save animals, you know, in the way that we do as vegans, but really it means preventing them from being born or whatever metric you want to use. But like, you can do so much more with money in the not in the animal rights world or the vegan or the plant-based nonprofit world than you can in a lot of the human rights worlds, all this stuff. And so like the money that you get when you go make $100,000-$200,000 a year doing fancy math stuff for a not great or unoffensive but not helpful, you know, corporation.
Yeah, I work for an unoffensive corporation.
We're like a cool corporation. That could go like a lot longer. And part of me would argue that a lot of the nonprofits aren't doing that much good, and that it would still, like, you're still kind of putting money into like what isn't like the best system, and maybe there's no alternative to that. But I feel like there's like downsides of either way you go.
Yeah. I mean, like, you just looked up the average actuarial salary, which is about $100,000. We estimate that most nonprofit jobs, like generously, let's say I was even making half of that $50,000, which I do think would be very generous for many, like small, for a lot of vegan organizations. But yes, Andy?
Across various occupations, median nonprofit salaries range from around $32,000 to $70,000, according to data from the salary comparison site PayScale. The average is around
$50,000. Okay, so let's, yeah.
I would guess it's lower in the animal rights world. I think that the fact that there's probably much more heavily funded types of activism, I would imagine human rights stuff, environmental stuff. I don't know, this is totally wild speculation. I guess all I know is that almost everybody that I know that works for a vegan nonprofit or something that has to do anything with like animals is scraping by.
So anyways, so yeah, let's say $50,000 working for a nonprofit. like, and I can make twice as much as that, $100,000 working as an actuary or something like that. Even if I donated $10,000 to an animal organization, I feel like that's a pretty significant amount of money to be donating.
10%.
Like would that be doing better? Even if it was $10,000 instead of working for someone, like, do you think that would go further?
It's really hard to calculate that without having a PhD in math like yourself. It's so hard to know, because the things that I think about, like, well, like, what is the work you'd be doing at that nonprofit? Would you be overworked like so many people I know? But then I'm like, everybody I know that works like a regular job is overworked as well. So, like, really, is it just kind of a toss up?
But the other thing is also, like, if I worked for, maybe I shouldn't say this on the record, but if I worked for like a bank or something like that, something that I did not really care about, you know, it's like, I feel like, yes, it might be a stressful job, but I would hope that I could you do your work during the day and then like you clock out and go home and you don't really like take any of it with you.
Yeah.
Something that you don't really care about versus working for like a nonprofit or something like that. Something that I felt like, it was like, would I want to put in like the extra hours and all these sorts of things, like stay later and do that extra work because it's something that I really cared about? And like, would that burn me out? You know, I guess this is such a hypothetical. I'm sure the job at the bank would also be stressful for a variety of reasons as well.
Yeah.
But
all those robberies.
And that's what I'd be doing, trying to prevent those robbers
with math. I mean, I think that, yeah, like anything that I am going to bring up to be like, don't work here, you'd be like, yeah, but that's the same at a corporate job. But you do bring up the added aspect of the passion aspect, let's call it. And I think that there, on some level, even though it's very counterintuitive to the whole do what you love thing, but there is. And I guess, I mean, this entire conversation is like giving in to working under the crushing weight of capitalism. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of like you said, Paul, it's like, this is the situation. This is like the world we're dealing with right now. But there is almost something to be said for like doing something that you are not necessarily passionate about. Because when you are doing something you're passionate about, it makes you, I would argue, it makes you vulnerable to so many of the issues that I have seen in the nonprofit world, which is people being underpaid and overworked and expected to do it, quote unquote, for the animals.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine it's like that at any nonprofit that's doing something altruistic, you know, like we think of nonprofit and we think as like the like lowly underpaid, like whatever, but obviously nonprofit just means that there's not like profits, Paul, but it doesn't mean that no one's like making money. There are obviously plenty of people, especially like heads of organizations. I forget what the salary of like Wayne Pacelli was at HSUS, but it was like a lot. It was a freaking lot of money, but like the average like worker, it's low down. And so you get pushed to do things, to work extra hours, to accept poor treatment because you think you're making a difference in the world for something that you care passionately about. Whereas you would not take that treatment, or you'd take it less, or you'd leave sooner if it was something that you didn't actually care about.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's tough because if we operate under the assumption of it's necessary for these nonprofits to exist, I think there's a lot of people who would say it's not necessary and that we should have just smaller, you know, grassroots, not like autonomous cells, essentially, which sounds like I'm talking about like direct action or something, but you know, like it's just sort of like this really bloated system.
You put on your balaclava before you sit at your desk in your cubicle.
You know, so again, this conversation is operating from like multiple assumptions, and we're just like operating under the it's good for these nonprofits to exist kind of assumption, I guess, in this conversation. But it does, I do find that it's kind of this really like bloated system, and it does, like, I honestly believe everybody that the vast majority of people that work in nonprofits would love to see a day when they don't need that profit to that nonprofit to exist because the problem has been eradicated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does feel like there's this kind of like cycle that perpetuates itself, and that a lot of the people wouldn't be okay if their nonprofit had to end because they had solved the problem. And it feels like it's just sort of this cycle of funding that keeps feeding in on itself. And
do you think people feel that way because they're making money off of it? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, like, Paul, I think that there are definitely some people that are very, in my view, cynically minded, that are sort of figureheads in this movement that do say, like, it's just the quote unquote, like, nonprofit industrial complex that keeps itself going. And it's like an accusation as to why groups work on welfare instead of like abolition or something, because it's like welfare is something that like is feel good for a lot of people. It doesn't require people to change the world. It just means you like change a couple laws.
And it doesn't solve the problem.
And it doesn't actually solve the problem, right? So I am not that cynical. I think that the people that work on welfare campaigns like generally believe that that's like the best possible thing that they could be doing for animals. I mean, I don't necessarily think that the people the lowest on the food chain, so to speak, think that. I know plenty of people that work for like PETA that think PETA is a garbage organization, but they're just so desperate to have any job in the movement because it's better than working at Burger King or something like that, or so, you know, a job that is in like direct opposition to your values. You might as well do something that's like kind of sort of in accordance with your values.
Yeah. Plot twist. I become an actuary, make $200,000 and then donate it all to PETA.
So you don't even have somewhere to live. You're just donating straight up all your money.
Sorry. Didn't mean to do
that. Okay. But I don't know. So it just, part of me is saying, is the solution of going working somewhere, making a bunch of money and then donating it to a nonprofit, is that even really a good solution? Is that really who can make the best use of your money? And I guess you could say, well, donate it to, like, if you gave 10 grand to an organization like Chili's on Wheels, it's like, you know, damn sure that money would go very far.
Yeah.
You know, there's a number of organizations that you could say that about, where you know that all their money isn't going to, you know, big bloated, I keep using the word bloated, but like, you know, like these big, like celebrity galas.
Chili fries getting real gassy.
You know, like people that don't spend their money on things that don't seem absolutely crucial. Like, obviously you could go fund that, or you could find like a project that you think is worth getting done. Like they're building a community center, whatever it is, and just pay for it to get done.
Yeah.
Or
like an animal sanctuary or something too.
Yeah.
A specific animal sanctuary.
Well, the thing is that it's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of the utilitarian crowd would say that doing the thing where you get the job that makes money to donate to people, that if you donate to like a sanctuary, that's like a big waste of money because it's such a small number of animals that are being saved.
I guess.
I'm not saying that's the position I hold, but that would be you going against the grain of the people that traditionally think that like the best possible outcome is for you to make a bunch of money and then donate it.
So who do they want me to donate it to?
They want you to donate it to the Humane League.
And this is a depressing conversation.
I know, Paul. So here's the thing is, I'm like, I don't think you should go and work in the like vegan or animal rights, like nonprofit world, because I think it's ultimately a miserable existence. And I think it's the thing that most people get burned out on after 2 years, maybe three. And I'm like, so don't do that. But then I also don't want to see you wasting away in some corporate job that you hate. Like, you're a young man full of math. You have such a like joyful exuberance and like love of life and positivity and all this stuff. And I would hate to see you just like squandering that in a horrible like desk job somewhere.
Yeah.
So I do, like, honestly, my solution is like, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some, it stinks because there's a good, I shouldn't say good because I don't really know for sure, but there's like a branch of the government. There's this organization called NIST, it's like the National Institute for Science, National Institute of
Sciencey things,
National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Mm-hmm.
And they like, they do some important stuff. It is a branch of the government, but it's like, they're doing some good stuff. Like they'll do stuff for NASA and those sorts of things. But then they also like will occasionally do like a shady thing with the government. Like the, so they develop all like the standards for cybersecurity. That's one of the things that they do. And there was like a controversy because basically like the CIA told them like, hey, when you develop the next standards for cybersecurity, make sure that we can, for the encryption, make sure that we have a backdoor into the encryption and we're able to get in when, like anytime that we want to. And that's like, it was like, that was not a public thing. And like a whistleblower came out and was like, hey, the CIA told NIST to do this for them. And they did it. And it's like, I wouldn't want to do stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know. It's just like, everything has its pros and cons, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately is this, obviously we're talking about like your specific life situation and you have a certain set of skills that like, that I don't want to say like really limits you, but it makes you like a very niche candidate for positions that I want to say very few, but like the vast majority of the population couldn't do what you can do with the knowledge that you now have. Yeah. And so that like almost gives you a much narrower focus on like where you could go if you want to actually use,
yeah,
your, you know, the education that you, I'm assuming you just paid a bunch of money for.
And I do want to use that.
Yeah.
Education.
Or you could be like this guy and get a film degree, film theory degree, and then just go live in your van selling t-shirts.
I could do that.
We can be rivals. Start your own clothing line.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I guess after this conversation, I'm more so leaning towards working some non-vegan related job and then donating money so that like donating the excess money that I would be making from working one of these types of jobs, which would be, I will say, seems easier to find a job like that than that's another thing, is it's like we're talking like, oh yeah, should I work in nonprofit or should I work in like at a bank or something like that? It's going to be a lot easier, I believe, to find a job at the bank or with the government or with insurance, those sorts of things, because there are so many of those jobs.
Yeah.
Versus it's like many of these organizations, especially the smaller vegan related ones, they don't have enough money to even have these sorts of positions. So that's the other thing too, is it's like, I probably wouldn't even be able to, in most places, find like this exact type of job. What I would probably end up doing is some sort of like research type position.
So, and that's another thing, that if you did find the job within the movement that was so hard to find, you might feel more inclined to stay with it for longer than you should if it happens to be that the job is not the right fit for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason I see a lot of people staying with organizations. You know, and the same thing I guess goes with other jobs as well, because it's not like easy to get a job.
Yeah.
What about the possibility of going and working a higher paying job for several years and saving up so you have a cushion that when you go into the nonprofit world and you're going to make money? And this conversation is also working off the assumption that nonprofit get paid less. And again, I want to acknowledge that there are some nonprofits that do pay well. I know that like in the animal rights world, the ones that pay the best are the ones that are in the least alignment with my values, at least. But I know a lot of the people that do work for them often tend to stick around longer than the average animal rights nonprofit kind of thing. But I think that there might also be something to be said for going and getting that job, the actuary job, and working for 3 years, seeing how you feel about it. And then having that cushion so that if you enter the nonprofit world and you find it's a job isn't a good fit for you, you don't feel like it's the only option you have and you have to stay with that job because of the transitional period of not having money between jobs and all of that.
Yeah, no. And honestly, Andy, that might be, even if just working in the nonprofits was what I wanted to do and I knew that that's what I wanted to do, that might be the best route anyways, because the other thing is, it's like, yes, I have these, I like, am good at math, just very broadly, but it's like, I don't necessarily know how to, and I can learn these things, how to do these things, but I don't necessarily know how to do like these specific jobs that they, that some places might require. And so the good thing about working in like a bank or a financial institution or something like that is there will be other people doing it that will show, that will train you how to do these things. And then if I worked there, you know, 5 years, and then I would say, okay, I know how to do this thing. Like even being an actuary, I would need to like start working somewhere and then study for these actuarial tests that I would need to take and pass to like become an actuary. So it's not like I can just do these things right now, but going to a place where they will teach me how to do these things, or they will give me the time to learn how to do these things, and like would make it so I could acquire these specific set of skills. And then I could say, go to a nonprofit and say like, hey, I can do this specific thing for you, and I know how to do this specific thing well, you know, rather than just like right now, it's just kind of going to nonprofits and being like, hey, what kind of math jobs do you have? You know, which is literally what I did at the animal rights conference.
You just walk around with a cup, like an empty cup, shaking and going math.
but I don't know. Do you remember at the animal rights conference, I was literally, I because it was a good place to network, I was going around to people and being like, hey, people that I knew, not just random people, and I was like, what kind of math jobs are there in the animal rights community? And there weren't a lot.
Slim pickings for sure. So like, is this ultimately a even though you have very specific circumstances, I think I was trying to get to this point earlier. Mm-hmm. I remember saying those words earlier. Even though you have very specific circumstances, this is ultimately just like a question and a conversation about like how unethical does a job have to be before, like where's the line? At what point is it something that is like just a part of doing the best you can within a unethical system, society, whatever? Because we get those questions all the time of people saying, I hate that I don't work somewhere that's, you know, it's either the person's like, I work at a steakhouse, or even just the person is like, I am an accountant and I don't feel like I'm helping animals doing that.
But I feel like it's more than that. It's like, I'm doing something that like, obviously there's, I'm not saying it's like, I'm the only, I'm clearly not the only person that do this. There's plenty of other math like minded people that could be doing these jobs and that will fill these jobs. But because it is like a slightly more specialized skill, it's like I'm filling this role for this institution or whatever that they need, and that's going to help them like grow or make more profit, you know? So it's like it feels different to me than getting some other jobs in like say a bank or something like that, where it's like, yeah, I'm helping this bank run its like day-to-day things, but I'm not like helping this bank grow. And I would feel like that's what I would be doing, is it's like, and again, it's like, I don't, we were reading the forums on whether being an actuary is unethical or not, but I just wouldn't want to feel like, oh, I'm the person that's like making those decisions about like, oh, this is where we need to stop giving people money because that's the best, that's the most risk for the company, so we don't want to give people those benefits, you know? And it's like, even though I wouldn't necessarily be the person making those choices, I'd be the person that's giving the data to help make those choices. And it's like, do I want to feel like I'm the person, like the reason that, even though it's like, yeah, sure, someone else is going to be the person, if I don't do it, someone else is going to run those numbers and figure that out.
But Paul, that's the reason why people, like one of the reasons why people justify eating animals is that like, oh, it's dead, or I'm just going to eat it, or me not doing it won't make a difference. I think the last one's the one I was trying to land on. And what if you acted in a way that was, what would society look like if everyone acted this way? And if everyone refused to take that actuary job because of its position in upholding an unethical, because of its position in upholding an unethical company, that then it wouldn't exist anymore. And so just by making the excuse of, well, someone's going to do this job, so it might as well be me to spend that money somewhere good, that ultimately it's like a cop out.
I feel like it's, while I agree that there is some analogy to be made with that, I don't think it's a great analogy, just because if everyone stopped eating meat, for instance, if everyone stopped eating meat, it's like, yeah, we'd have this issue of this wild, brief overpopulation of certain animals in certain places, and we would figure out how to deal with that. But it's like, then we would go on with our lives because we have this other, we have these alternatives. But I feel like that's not the same with this. These are these like institutions that affect people's daily lives that it's like, if everyone just stopped working for insurance companies, then there would just be no more insurance. And then that would, like, that's like a whole, you know, a whole institution that would need to be replaced by something else. And I feel like it's much more likely that these things are going to get changed more than just erased completely. Like, I feel like they're going to get changed into something that is still going to need those types of jobs anyways. Like, even if all, you know, private insurance companies went away, there would still need to be people figuring out, like I was saying at the beginning of the episode, it's like, there's not an unlimited amount of money. So it's like someone somewhere needs to figure out, like, okay, this is how we decide how to give out the money that we do have to give out.
So what if you, like, worked on solving that problem? Like, what if you worked on creating Medicare for All? And, like, even if Medicare for All has its limits, or, you know, and again, I don't know, this is just like a, because that's what the actuary deals with, I guess. But, like, why not then go try to find a job that, like, is working to combat that problem?
Andy, I might argue that even beginning to understand how those systems work require me to have that job to begin with, you know? Because it's like, I don't know how to answer that question at all. I wouldn't even know where to begin to answer that question. But if I had that job, maybe it's like I would have a better understanding of how the system works and then actually be able to answer that question.
Inside man.
Now we're off the record.
What if you were the guy that was like, you gave them wrong figures so that would mean that they would cover more people?
Is that a serious question? Do you want me to answer?
Sure, why not?
I don't.
We're here.
I think that I would probably get figured out. Although, Andy, I've been listening to this con artist podcast. People have gotten away with far wilder things, but I'm sure that I'm not smart enough in that in this area to know how to pull that off just yet.
I mean, even if it's like, this is probably a whole other horrible world to be involved in, backing and working for a political candidate that would work to solve that problem.
Yeah, but I mean, I still stand firm that I would probably need to be in that job to understand. Like, I could spend my time reading about these things, and certainly I could learn more about them and like study up on these things, but I'm not going to be making any money to support myself living just learning about these things to be able to then combat them, you know? Like, I would still need to be getting some job.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just feel like there's a bunch of people with interesting ideas and solutions already that it wouldn't require you to go work for them first.
Maybe, but if these are just people with interesting ideas that I certainly may agree with, like, yeah, this situation does seem better, and I would do that position if that was the institution that was in place, that doesn't help me with like the right now of, well, what am I going to do right now? I still need to do something right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think honestly it starts with like really looking into what other jobs are available to you. And I think there's a lot to be said for not diving into the nonprofit world right away.
Yeah. You know, I mean, honestly, also it's like, Andy, I want you to answer this honestly, but, and I truly mean that, like, do you think I'm being too hard on myself if I say, like, if I feel guilty about saying, like, well, maybe I can just work. And again, it's like, I don't have a job. I haven't even started applying to jobs. This is like, you know, this is so far in advance, not super far, but this is still in advance. And like, maybe I could find
it's
a
like months, right?
Months. Yeah. Yeah. So it's slightly in advance. Maybe I could find a job for some organization or company that I felt like was neutral. You know, it's like, I'm not making the world a better place, but I'm also not supporting an organization that I believe is making the world a worse place. But like, but even if I worked for like an insurance company or something like that, if I then, you know, was using some of this excess money I'd be getting to donate and stuff like that. But even if it's just to like get the skills, if my long-term plan was like, well, I'm going to use these skills and sometime move to somewhere else where I could use now those new skills that I had to hopefully make the world a better place. Like, is that okay? Like, should I feel guilty about doing that thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I know there's a lot that we like do to give ourselves like free passes or to make ourselves feel better about doing things that suck or maybe not the most ethical thing to do. But there's also, I don't know, I guess I feel really cynical and I just feel the impending crushing weight of the apocalypse upon us. And my head is like, let's just do the best we can. I know this is a conversation about, but what is the best that I can do? But I don't think you should feel guilty about that. I think that if you spend too much time feeling bad about it or guilty about it, that can be really debilitating and that can prevent you from doing any good whatsoever. And that sometimes we do just need to give ourselves a break.
I mean, well, maybe, you know, what if I work for like the EPA or something like that, you know, some environmental government organization that I thought like, okay, now, of course, they're not necessarily doing great things at the moment, but is the EPA, is that who I'm thinking of? Like,
well, they did commit to ending animal testing.
Okay. But aren't they, isn't the current like head of the EPA a person that like really hates the environment?
I mean, that seems likely. The average salary of an EPA worker is $49,200 to $132,000.
That's a lot of money.
That's probably like very few people achieve the higher one, but
yeah. Well, it says it's average.
Yeah, but ZipRecruiter says $32,000 to $56,000, so who knows?
But yeah, I mean, so it's like something like that, I feel like might be, obviously this is without looking into like what kinds of jobs or what impact that could possibly have. But that might be the more like, you know, it's, yes, it's working for the government, but also it's doing something that's hopefully like doing some sort of research position that's hopefully going to then be used to make some sort of positive impact.
Yeah. I mean, that certainly seems like a decent middle ground.
But then it's like, what if I have to do animal testing, Andy?
But they're ending the animal testing.
Or so they say.
Yeah.
I can become the whistleblower.
We'll see. You're going to have to wait a couple of years for them to, yeah, be that whistleblower, Paul. Paul.
Yes, Andy?
How do you feel right now?
I think I feel, well, still struggling with it, but I think I feel like a little bit better about just getting something and it not having to be the thing that I do forever, you know, and just like getting something, seeing how that goes, probably getting something that's not like animal related, just because it seems like the thing that's going to be, not to say I won't try, but it seems like the more likely thing that will happen just because of there being so few jobs and also the types of jobs that I would want. But just like being okay with, I feel okay with getting that type of job, learning those skills, and then if it's not somewhere where I would want to work forever, then hopefully transferring to somewhere else where I could then use those skills to help them out. Because also, we didn't even really talk about it, but like originally when I started math, we talked about this in one of the bonus episodes, but like I wanted to do cybersecurity type stuff. And now I'm more so leaning towards data science sort of things, which is like a whole other, we just mostly talked about being an actuary, but really like data science is the type of thing where I could kind of see myself as more. And that kind of opens you up to, I mean, that's just using math to analyze big sets of data, which could be applied to a lot of places. So yeah, so we'll see.
All right. Well, if you're listening and you have advice or a job for Paul.
Yeah, I will say, we harped on the actuary thing a lot. That's not particularly like that would be I would rather not be an actuary. Put me in some data science position.
So you can send us an email to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
Yeah, let me know if I'm completely off base on this stuff, because it's not, you know, it's not like a world that I'm in currently working at one of those types of positions. So if you do work in those positions and you like
got that insider info.
Yeah, I want you to be honest. Like, let me know if you like it. Let me know if you don't like it, but you still work there. I could be completely off base with my current opinion. So I want to hear, I would love to hear what people who are working in those sorts of positions or have some sort of related anecdote or just any other thoughts. Email them in, thebeardedvegans @gmail.com. Andy, on a lighter note, where can the good people find you?
This weekend, big weekend in Southern California. I'll be at the Desert Veg Fest in Palm Desert, California on December 7th. I'll be speaking at 1 o'clock with Chelsea Lincoln and Callie Coker. And that should be awesome.
Are you just going to get up on the panel and hit the play button on our last bonus episode?
That plus a couple of air horns, obviously. And then the next day, December 8th, I'll be at Vegan Exchange LA in Los Angeles. Cool little pop-up from the folks that brought you Vegan Street Fair. And then December 14th, my last event of the year, Delco the Halls Vegan Market in Media, Pennsylvania. And you can find me there. And you can also go to CompassionCo.com, which is my clothing line, to find all the details or get a Beard Vegan shirt if you want it.
Very cool.
So, Paul, I know you're really struggling with what you should do. And you asked me, like, what should I do right now? And I think what you should do right now is say the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Check, check, check. 1, 2, 1, 3.
Oh, 3.
Can you give me a...
Check, check, 1, 2, check, 1, 2.
Boring. We are rolling.
What?
You're not going to give me a bump and a bump, 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 bump.
It was implied. What's up, Beardo?
Are there non-healthcare related applications for actuaries?
Let me answer this question immediately. You put on your balaclava before you sit at your desk in your cubicle.
I type by smashing a what's the
crowbar?
What's the
bolt cutter?
Yeah. All right,
like a wire cutter. I would have also accepted giant wrench as well. So, Andy, before we get into this episode, we got a few announcements to make. That first one being that the mailbag is coming up. It's next episode. Hopefully we haven't already recorded it, but assuming that we haven't already recorded it because it's coming out a week from today, if you're listening to this when it comes out, please send us in any mailbag questions that you have.
Any particular size, Paul, that you have a preference for?
Send me those big questions. Send me those small questions. Period.
Keep those medium questions out your mouth.
What do you want to say?
What's up, Beardos?
Say I'm.
You can say I'm.
Oh, wouldn't it be better for her to say I'm Linda because she just said that?
Okay.
No, I'm saying it would make sense for her to say I'm Linda and I'm Ken.
And then who's saying we're Paul's parents?
Why don't you say we're Paul's parents and I'll say and you listen. So.
What's up, Beardos? I'm Linda.
I'm Ken.
We are Paul's parents.
And you're listening to episode 209 of The Bearded Vegans.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay.
You just have to say it pretty close into the
mic. Okay.
We're rolling.
What's up, Beardos? I'm Linda.
I'm Ken.
Okay.
Okay, start over.
So you're going to say we're Paul's parents, and I'll say...
You can bring it up even a little closer to
that. This... Okay.
But I wouldn't hold on to it.
Okay. What's up, Beardos?